Hello, welcome to another mini episode of CRT Sound System. We're talking about Zone of the Enders, Fist of Mars. Hi, Reese, how are you?
Yeah. Oh, hi, Tom. I'm absolutely fucking unhinged right now. I got extremely, probably the most baked I've ever been. Not ever been, that's crazy. That was in college. But most baked I've been in like the past 2, 3, 4 years last night, just like doing nice. Massive hit after massive hit, and trying to follow a single episode of Evangelion and being unable to.
Yeah, I mean.
So yeah. I woke up quite recently, and I'm still recovering from that and just hanging out, ready to listen to some tunes. I am like 4 days away from the movers taking all my shit to Seattle, and then I can go to Seattle, and I don't have to sit here in my fucking bombed out apartment. I've been losing my damn mind, as I told you before the episode.
Yeah.
And I'm letting all the listeners know too.
Yeah. yeah, no, it's been a rough month for you, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it took me so long to launch this move. I guess it's kind of fitting that everything is just going to take forever with it. And then I am never going to move again. The meteor's coming.
Mm.
I'm staying.
Yeah. My wife and I decided the same thing after we moved last. Once we bought this house, we were like, nope, never moving again.
This is why else buy the house?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, we're talking about Zone of the Enders, Fist of Mars. So not a lot of people know about this game. It's a GBA game that is a spin-off to a game that not a lot of people played as it was, and that was more related to the anime spin-off itself than it was to the actual game. So, like, Zone of the Enders is probably most famous for being included with the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo.
That's what you threw in the trash so you could play the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo.
Yeah, more or less. And I mean, like, the only reason I know about it is because of that. But, like, I was one of the people who was like, I'm not throwing this game in the trash. I'm going to try it out on my PS2. And I ended up fucking loving it. Like, Zone of the Enders is not a... It's a good game. It's not a great game. It's got a lot of problems. It's incredibly short. The CG is incredibly dodgy. But like the gameplay is so, so solid that like all of its shortcomings don't really matter. And it's not long enough for you to sort of learn to hate some of the more annoying elements of the game. And it is like, and even with it being as short as it is, it's quite a padded game. And then, yeah, this came out sort of the year after, maybe the same year, yeah, 2001, but it's a completely different game, and is like, it's more to do with the anime OVA and the anime series that are sort of prequels to the game. I forget the exact timeline. It doesn't really matter. But this game is a Super Robot Wars game, essentially. And I've never played any Super Robot Wars games, but this is the one that I've enjoyed the most.
That's to say that it's kind of more tactical. Mm. Like you're on a grid, you know, doing more turn-based stuff. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's actually developed by the people who were developing the Super Robot Wars games at the time.
Oh, okay.
There's some stuff obviously that's different and new, and like there's like the distinction in the series between like, so there's orbital frames, which are like the proper the big fancy mechs, the ones that your characters use, and then there's levs or levs, which are just like just your average sort of like what's the word, like construction stuff, or like non-anime style mechs, essentially. They're the more workaday mechs, so like there's sort of that distinction between it. So you're building your party.
9-to-5 lunch pail mechs, I got
you. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about. So like your party is often built around like the very powerful Orpal Frames as your sort of like big hitters, and then like your LEVs and your Levs as just more being more like support based or like snipers and stuff like that. So like there's a little bit of strategy to it depending on what you want. And then like the stories then sort of presented in more of a visual novel style. With some like genuinely good art in it, and there's some like nice background work and things like that. Like pretty good for its time on the GBA, I would say. But have you played any Super Robot Wars games?
I played a little Super Robot Wars. It's something I've always meant to get back to.
Yeah,
but it was also like very dense, and I love Gundam, but I haven't seen all of Gundam, and I haven't. And my love doesn't necessarily extend to other mecha anime. I'm kind of a fair weather fan with Gundam only, so I had some issues with getting into it. But it seemed perfectly fun and fine. Would you say that Fist of Mars is a strategy game with visual novel elements, or a visual novel with strategy game elements? I think that's a
It's more of a strategy game with visual novel elements. Like it's quite story heavy, and you know, like the story will interrupt the battles, but like your main time in the game, like your primary amount of game time is going to be spent in these battles. So you'll sort of like you'll have a little intro where like people you'll have a little chat with your characters, and then you'll go into a battle. Like battles sort of take maybe 10 minutes and then maybe up to a bit longer than that. I think the biggest twist in the battles is that there's the I forget what it's called, but it goes into like a first person mode when you're attacking or defending. So you could do like critical hits if you like. So basically what happens is like you get a targeting reticle and you either have to move to avoid the enemy mech, or try and press the button when it's on the center of their mass, and you can sort of rather than dealing with like percentages, you can actually game it quite well. If you get good at it, you can like deal a ton of damage to high level mechs without needing to like be high level yourself. Like there's actually like a skill element to it, which I think is really interesting. For a strategy RPG where most of the time you're just usually relying on your percentages. It's a cool little feature, yeah. You can turn it off, I think, as well, and just sort of have the game calculate percentages for you. But, like, that is obviously suboptimal. But, like, that's your sort of your main gameplay is these top-down battles. And like the story is decent. It's like there's a lot of fairly standard anime stuff going on in it. Like your main character is an orphan, and just like randomly comes across a mech in a storage facility.
Classic.
And then turns out he was the only person who could have piloted it. Like that kind of nonsense.
Naturally. There's no other way these things go.
Yeah.
That's super funny. It was mentioned in sort of like the very brief amount of research I did that the kind of like idea behind this is that they wanted a mech series that felt like a classic anime. And so that was the style they would go for, which is why when they talk about, they were showing clips of the anime, and they said that the anime looks a whole lot more retro than it is because they specifically wanted that more old school self-shading, even though we were starting to get into more CG-based techniques. But that was rejected a little bit because they wanted to look a little bit like Gundam, look a little bit like, you know, what's that other big anime one everybody loves? Macross, stuff like that. And it's other interesting thing about this is that like everything Zone of Enders related came out in like a somewhat narrow like 3 year period, 4 year period, and then just net it was like three games, like an anime, like a movie, and then just like that's it, no more.
That's it. Yeah,
yeah, they did like an HD thing for the animes, and that's it.
Yeah, there was a HD re-release of 1 and 2 on the 360, which coincidentally came with a demo for Metal Gear Solid Rising, which I thought was a fun and like Zone of the Enders 2 or Zone of the Enders Anubis or the Second Runner or whatever you want to call it, like genuinely the best sequel ever made, like in terms of like what it takes from the first game and how it improves on everything, like just perfect, just absolutely perfection. Like I love that game so much, like the gameplay is so much better, the story is so much better, it's got so many cool mech designs, and again, like you mentioned, it really leans into the anime of it, like it's got like really nicely done animated cutscenes, the whole game is cel shaded, it's just such an improvement on the first game in the best possible way.
It's interesting to me that it was rejected so resoundingly, unfairly, 100%. But I don't think I can't, of course, speak for Ireland, but in the United States, anime had started to leak through, right?
Yeah.
Like Metal Gear Solid is anime, it's such its own thing that you know it can sell through. Final Fantasy is anime. It took me a long time to accept that. But, you know, it felt like its own separate thing coming through. And Zone of Enders was just too anime. And certainly we had no real connection to any kind of mech stuff, especially something that's, like, referencing old mech stuff. Like, it's you don't have to, like, watch Gundam and stuff to know what's going on in Zone of Enders. But I do feel like it is the sort of thing where, like, you really do appreciate the fact that they just wanted to do one of those. And I think that you might appreciate Zone of Enders a little more if you're just like, oh, what if Gundam was Scrutable? Like, that's how exciting. Let's check this out.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I think we probably talked about it a lot in the Cowboy Bebop episode, but like I think there was definitely a bit of a parallel sort of awakening to anime in a lot of the English speaking West around this time, like not just the US, but like the UK and Australia and us here, like we were still quite a fair bit behind the French, who are the real anime sickos.
Did you have that big Princess Mononoke marketing push in Ireland?
No, not quite. It wasn't until Spirited Away came out that was when like people were like, "Oh, anime is going mainstream now." Like,
there were definitely like trailers in movie theaters were just like, "Check this out! It's called fucking anime." Certainly the movie to do it for. And they had like a all-star like voice acting cast. That's why you're just when you listen to the dub of Princess Mononoke, you're like, why is Billy Bob Thornton in this? And it's because they shelled out because they wanted it to be like a big crossover hit, and I think it was to some degree.
I think so, yeah.
And so that's kind of what I think of as the first initial salvo, and it took some time, I think, to wear people down. And get them to accept the weeb inside.
I don't specifically remember much about Mononoke, but I do remember like reading magazines in the like early 90s, like game magazines, and they would talk about anime or Japanime.
That's what I do it for the longest time. I'm just like, anime? You mean Japanimation? That which is Tenchi Muyo and Sailor Moon, the only two animes I know right now.
Yeah. And I remember like ads for Ghost in the Shell and Akira, like showing up. And like, you know, games, they'd review games from Japan that were like based on anime and stuff like that. So you'd, it was something that I was aware of, but I never sort of experienced until I was quite a bit older. Again, see the Cowboy Bebop episode for more information on that. But yeah, I think there was definitely like a parallel sort of awakening to anime.
Yeah, yeah. As I was not on the Cowboy Bebop episode, I can continue to expound.
Yeah.
I got a VHS tape from an internet pen pal who was just like, check this the fuck out. And it had Ninja Scroll, Akira, and just a shitload of Dragon Ball Z. And I was like, damn, this is the coolest tape I've ever owned.
Yeah.
so that was my introduction, really.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were just like, oh, yeah, somebody gave them a tape and said, check this shit out.
That's how I learned about Cowboy Bebop. Is somebody, we were all baked out of our mind, and the one guy's dorm who had his like a bigger than average monitor hooked up to his PC, who had downloaded like 200,000 different things from LimeWire. Just being like, check this out, and it was Cowboy Bebop. and then you hilariously responded to that when I posted about that. You were just like, check this out is such an ominous phrase in the college dorm. which I don't think we experienced, but that's because I think maybe because it was slightly more film nerd oriented since I was at film school. But I have encountered similar groups of nerds where there's always the guy who wants to like surprise you with something horrible.
Yeah.
He's like, check out this tentacle porn. And you're like, okay. Ha ha.
Yeah. No, there was definitely people in our group who would definitely do that. But like, yeah, it's again, we're just talking about how people can just go online and just watch anime on any given streaming service now. You know, it makes me sound like such an old curmudgeon to say it, but like I do miss that there was something transgressive about anime, and not in a bad way, that where it is now where like the transgressive anime shit is just like, here's a bunch of loli bait or like or some other nonsense. Like there, you know, there was just like, oh my god, it's cartoons but it's violence. And you might see a titty, like you might see Chun-Li take a shower, if you got the right version of Street Fighter.
100%. I mean, that level of transgression, it used to be something like, you know, markedly good, and it's hard to parse it today without I don't know, doing a fucking year's worth of research of what has happened to transgression. But I remember like I going to watch like Pink Flamingos and how transgressive that was, but like it was obviously like there's stuff in there I do not think people should do, but but like as a piece of art, that transgression was breaking down barriers in a very good way. John Waters is, you know, had her eating shit, you know, not to in the glory of eating shit. It was like supposed to be this experience that like shook you awake artistically, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, like just be like, stop, you know, just like totally lulling yourself with all of the like, you know, trash that is anti-gay. You know, that is somewhat Nazi. And it's like, I love, you know, like a lot of mainstream movies, but there is, you know, you can dig into them and find some pretty problematic trends in between them. That doesn't mean that you should like throw away your copy of Con Air. But, you know, it is a thing. And that's why the transgression is good. And at least was good. Now, when somebody is like 1,000% normal, I'm just like, whoo, that is the craziest fucking thing I've ever seen. That they didn't and scream or shit their pants or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird just how, like, yeah. Hard to sort of to wrap your head around it, really.
Yeah, beyond the scope of a CRT sound system, but it's
for sure. And certainly me in my frazzled state at the moment.
Well, both are frazzled states. Yeah. I'm just rambling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I reckon we'll jump into our one and only block for the mini episodes.
Lovely.
So let me pull up my notes here. So I got a bunch of tracks here. So we have Intermission, Strategy Explanation, Every Day, Onward to Victory, Mystery, Tension, Impact, Offense and Defense, and lastly is Sortie. And we'll talk a little bit about the composers after this. There isn't a lot to say, unfortunately. Yeah.
Thank you.
a real nice mix of stuff there, I thought. It's a really interesting soundtrack. Like you get a little bit of drum and bass, a little bit of techno, a little bit of house, which is sort of congruent with the main series as well. Like that's the sort of the sonic palette that's working from as well. But I think it does a lot of sort of classic anime style stuff as well. Like tracks like Tension and Mystery and stuff all have that sort of very, there's a very specific style to them that is evoking a very specific mood.
I would say that probably is what makes it unique, is that everything I listen to on the soundtrack has, it feels just like so classic. Like that track that was just like Onward to Victory, like just it was such a like rousing type of song, like battle song. But in all of them they had like this beat to it that's kind of like made it a little bit more. Mystery, I think, and it was my favorite that I mentioned, is that it was clearly kind of like a moody song, kind of like clearly embodying the unknown, but there was just like that very, very slight like funky beat, like right there at the bottom, that most mystery songs don't go for.
Yeah, it's good.
It was very engaging, and it was like such a smooth listen. Alistair yelled at us, "It's like, why aren't you talking?" And we're just like, "Alistair, we're vibing. Shut up." Alistair's our recording bot.
It's an incredibly sophisticated soundtrack, and like the Game Boy Advance has a lot of sound issues. Like you'll have heard it on the mix here, like there's a lot of hissing to it, but like it's got a lot of it can do a lot with very little. It's got samples, it's got some PCM, there's it can access the Game Boy, the original Game Boy, for like little bleeps and bloops, which is why everybody hates the Castlevania Harmony of Distance soundtrack, is because it just uses the Game Boy sound channels. It doesn't use any of the sample channels. My understanding of how the sound hardware works is that like it's similar to the N64 in that there's no dedicated hardware. So like the more that's going on in your game, the less you can actually do with the sound. So like it's given that there's a lot of static images and relatively low resolution sprites in this game and stuff, so that they have a little bit more to work with in terms of what they can do in the sound. So there's two people listed as, well, I'm not going to say composers, they're just listed as sound in the credits. Okay. There's Tatsuya Fujiwara and Susumu Nakamura. Fujiwara has done a lot more. There's only four games that Nakamura has actually been credited with. There's The Zone of the Enders, something called Hamepane Tokyo Mew Mew. And then presumably a sequel called Tokyo Mew Mew Tojo Shin Mew Mew. and then a Yu-Gi-Oh game for the PS2. Again, just credited with sound and all of those. I'm not sure if they're like a Konami employee or if they're just work for Winky Soft. Fujiwara then... The most interesting thing that jumps out to me, and there's a couple of bits and pieces there, but they did the soundtrack for the DSiWare Blaze Blue spin-off that was a arena battler. Nobody played because it was a DSiWare game. That's their Tekken Tag Tournament 2, the PS Vita Katamari game. Last game they did was something called Lairland Story, which I've never heard of. But yeah, I seem to go off to work for Namco for a while by the looks of it here. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of Namco games in the list here, and yeah, starting off some Yu-Gi-Oh! So again, not a lot that I know to see about these two. But they've made a really good soundtrack here, and I wish they did more that we could listen to. I might have to do a bit more of a deep dive on what they actually have done together.
I know that there were like three different companies that were sort of like working parallel to each other. So that apparently, you know, it was like Konami, and I forget the other two. You just mentioned one.
But it's Winkysoft, and I forget. Yeah.
But apparently that, you know, they didn't really collaborate with each other very much, which is, at least according to the one documentary thing I watched, is why it's kind of remarkable that everything synergizes so well. But that's the reason why so many different Zone of Enders things were able to come out so quickly, was that it was just like this effort from three different companies. So we really have no idea exactly, you know, like who was where these people were coming from. Maybe they're just Konami, or maybe it's a bit muddier. That's one of the things we deal with here at CRT Sound System, is we never can just be like, sure. All right, this is so rarely we could be like, this is just part of their body of work. You know, you can see these 35 games or clearly have a touch of influence. There are some composers that are like that, but, you know, I would say more likely it's a mess, especially when you get into stuff like Yu-Gi-Oh games. It's like, Lord knows what sound on a Yu-Gi-Oh game meant. Either you did everything, or they already had you recycling assets. Who even fucking knows?
Yeah, I mean,
to be a Yu-Gi-Oh fan.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to say for sure. Like, you can see some Konami staff are sort of credited on this game as like supervisors, but you know, it's hard to say how much actual input. Like, for anybody who doesn't know, like, strictly speaking, this is in the, you know, like, Hideo Kojima canon. Like, he was a producer on the first game and the second game, I think. But, like, I don't know if he actually had anything to do with the production of the game outside of just being like, maybe somebody should make a mech game.
It really does seem like that. And I think, you know, Hideo was kind of, you know, on his meteoric rise.
Yeah. Hadn't
made a lot of people angry yet. So I think he could just be like, hey, everybody, you should give money to this project. We should put it on Metal Gear Solid 2. the demo of Metal Gear Solid 2 on it, so we could give it some boost. But that, I think it's a very outsider type of producer role.
Yeah. Like, his name is on the front cover of the game. But, like, yeah, again, I think that's more of a marketing thing than anything else. It's like, the story is by a different guy entirely. I forget the name of him, but, like, yeah. And, you know, like, Shinkawa did the mech art. So, like, obviously the mech designs are incredibly good. You know, there's a lot of that to it. So, like, you know, there is a cool Konami sort of connection, even though a lot of it was outsourced. But, like, Zone of the Enders is a cool little series while it lasted. I tried to rewatch the anime, Dolores Eye, it's called. That was a weird ass show. It's just there's for like a series that has like three games, an anime series and a movie. It's sort of all over the place in terms of time and tone, but it somehow just manages to be a little bit more cohesive than you'd think.
This gets into spoiler territories, but in Zone of Enders, is war good or maybe bad?
War is, I think, bad.
Okay, all right.
I was trying to figure that out, but yeah, like the main character doesn't want to hurt people, but also is in the middle, has found himself piloting a mech.
You gotta get in the mech,
my dude.
I mean, if there's any trope that is required of a mech anime, is that a young boy has to somehow be funneled into a mech, either in Neon Genesis. They guilt him by bringing the injured girl out and just being like, you're really going to let her pilot the mech, pussy? And I guess in this, it's a little bit more...
I mean, yeah, like his motivation is quite similar. I would say that character, I forget the main character of the first game. I forget his name, but like, he's very much Shinji. Like, there's... Shinji with the serial numbers filed off in a big way. Like, there's no way around it, but it does. The second game does a really funny joke, essentially, where like, that character comes back, and he's got his own mech. He's got a different mech. You're now in your main character in the second game is now in the mech that he was in the first game. And like, he's got his own mech, and it's based on the Vic Viper from Gradius. And it's the sickest fucking mech you've ever seen in your life. And he is cool as shit. He's had a complete character redesign. He's like, he loves being a fucking mech pilot. It's such a funny, like, just complete, like, piss take of, like, this guy sucked the entire time in the first game when you played him. So now we're going to make him the coolest character in this game.
Awesome. Sick.
Yeah. The whole series is great. I have a lot of affection for it. Like, again, like, none of these games are perfect. A lot of times the translations are dodgy as hell. The writing isn't the best. The gameplay can get a little bit repetitive. Like, there's, you know... there are many problems with them, but I just have so much affection for them. From sort of once I played the first game, I was like, "This is my series."
My understanding is that this is really respected in the mech fuckers community, the builders of plastic toys and such. I have where I've heard about this game the most. Are just people being like, oh, I did. They had this cool Zone of Enders thing that's hard to find, and everybody's pogging their ass off in response. So and that goes a long way for me. For a mech thing, that to have it kind of retain that cachet.
Yeah, last year I bought a one of the a model kit of. Oh god, I'm actually completely forgetting the name of the mech from the first game, or the mech from the game, Jetty. Jesus Christ, how could I forget that? Like, they're still making those. Like, that was a new one. They brought out Jetty and Anubis, and I think a third one. It's the one and only plastic model kit that I've got. It took me about a week to put it together. I did not have a good time. Like, genuinely, I just had a terrible time doing it. I was like, this is awful. I can see the appeal. Like, I can see why somebody might want to do it and why people get obsessed with it. But I'm like, I made this one thing and I really did it just out of love for the series.
That is awesome. And then this is going to be the one time you're like, yes, I built that. I can do it.
It's in my eyeline right now. It's just up in the corner. It's a beautiful, like, it's a really, really cool mech, like a cool model. And like I said, because it's all Shinkawa who did like the Metal Gear designs, like, there's so many cool like mech designs in the whole series. But like, yeah, I do not have the patience or the will to do another one of those.
You got a child you're building. That's kind of like building a mech of flesh and bone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, last year as well, I was off sick for like the majority of last year, so I did have the time to put into it. That I do not have at the moment now that I'm back to work. But yeah, I like looking at it. It's a cool little mech, and a great series. One day I will do a main feed episode of 1 and 2, because those have really, really good soundtracks as well. Those are more from the Konami sound team, like Noriko Hibino and those people who are in the Konami sound team. They really knocked it out of the park with those two games.
It seems remarkably high quality from everything I looked into. I'm probably at the very least going to check out that OVA, which seems
The OVA is pretty cool. Yeah, it's short. Like the anime is 26 episodes long, and is sort of this weird slice of life. Like the robot, the orbital frame in it, Dolores, is essentially a child. And it gets a bit sort of weird and anime tropey because she's in love with the main character. And there's stuff then that sort of, it's a weird show. but yeah, I hesitate to recommend that, but the, Idolo, I think is what the, is what that, the OVA is called, and that does, I believe, if I recall correctly, directly link to Fist of Mars. I think one of the mechs, one of the orbital frames, and that comes around to fuck your shit up in Fist of Mars, but is otherwise unconnected to the main games, other than just like the basic sort of the universe.
It seems like there's a lot of stage setting in the animated stuff that where it's just like you learn about a lot of character backstory stuff, but it's just sort of like the real stage and show are the games.
It's a lot more about the like the Earth Mars war and like, you know, the sort of the politics of the difference between Earth and Mars in the series, which is interesting. They thought about it a lot, but it doesn't really sort of come up in the games too much, because you're much more focused in on like, this guy has a mech and he's trying to destroy the planet with this mech. You gotta stop him, kind of stuff. You gotta stop him. Yeah. Yeah, and what I would say as well is like, if the first game is very short, you can beat that game in like 5 hours, like maybe 10 if you really took your time, and like it's very skippable, even though it is enjoyable. But this, if you want to play one of them, play the second game. As I say, one of the best sequels ever made. It just takes everything from the first game and just heightens it. Improves everything. Just it's buttery smooth on the PS2. Play the PS2 version, PS2 version or the Mars version that was released on PS4 and PC. Do not play the HD re-release for the PS3 and Xbox 360. That is a bad port. But like, that is the one you want to play if you want to play any of them. It is an incredible game.
Mars one, you said.
Yeah, Mars is the name. It's like, it was VR. It was like a VR re-release of it. But yeah, absolutely worth your while. Some of the best set pieces in video games. Really cool, just like mech designs. You get some badass weapons. A bunch of anime nonsense happens. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, and this mini episode has gone on for far too long, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think we'll finish up. I don't think we're going to bother doing any plugs. I don't know yet when this episode is going to come out, probably in like 2 weeks from now. I want to do some more mini episodes if I can. Hopefully there will be a good reason to do them. Well, I'm looking forward to getting things back on track with the pod once you get moved.
I am. Oh God, me too, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's we managed to record a couple of them, so yeah. I just need to get my place back up and running, get the proper mic there, and then I can return to the usual stuff. So yeah, thank you so much, Tom. I had a wonderful time, and this is something I'm glad I know about now.
Excellent, glad to introduce you to it. So the last track is just called Final Battle, and we will leave you at that. Good night, Reese.
Good night, Tom.
Take care.
Cool. Well,
I think that might be our longest mini episode.
I love to yap. Thank you.